I'm Ed the Sock, and this is FU Politics on Fun, the FU Network, powered by your support on Patreon.com/FU Network TV, and through PayPal at FUNetworkTV@gmail.com. And now, here's your show.
Hello, Stephen. Welcome back.
Hello, Stephen. You say that as if I've been away for a while.
Well, it's been almost a week since we've spoken. who knows what you've been up to?
Well, that's true. But, we've been consistent with this show far more than we've ever been before. So congratulations to both of us.
Yeah, for better or worse. Yes, we have been, if not consistent.
And speaking of consistency, there doesn't appear to be a whole lot of consistency from the conservatives as far as their opinion on the We charity, as many people have uncovered tweets with photographs from people like Aaron O'Toole, Peter McKay, photos with Andrew Scheer in a group with the Kielbergers, lauding the wonderful work that WE does. And all of a sudden, when there's blood in the water and there's an attempt at some political fortune boosting, all of a WE is just this fraudulent organization and just some kind of crony organization to the Trudeau Liberals, despite the fact that in Brian Pallister's government gave them a couple million dollars as well and said that they did wonderful work. And it's just amazing how fast something can be turned into a political football, and there's like no sense of self-awareness or shame that these are the same people that you said did wonderful work.
Self-awareness and shame in Canadian politics? I don't think those go together.
Well, and certainly not with, I mean, the Liberals have their own errors, their own blind spots, which we'll talk about. But the Conservatives, they just feel that, I guess, that if they just don't ever acknowledge that they had other opinions, if they don't say, well, we thought that then, but now we found out something different, if they just deny that it ever existed, like Peter McKay trying to pull down and delete the tweet that that was positive about WE, they figure that, well, it's never going to catch up to them. But and for amongst the people that want to hate Trudeau, they don't care.
It doesn't make any difference.
It doesn't matter.
And, you know, and WE as a charity, you know, up until, you know, like 10 days ago, WE was sort of the rock star of Canadian charity. So, you know, it was this success story, you know, founded by children under a slightly different name back at that time. You know, everyone got the Order of Canada. And like you said, everyone wanted to get their picture taken on that birthday pony. You know, if they were doing something, you know, they fought for invitations to speak at WE events. They, you know, some of them were paid speakers, some of them were unpaid speakers. McKay's wife, I believe the most recent version is that she was an unpaid speaker at one of these events, and the tweet that McKay had up was praising his wife and the WE charity organization for their wonderful work and the positive message that they bring to everybody. And it's been going on for ages. And, you know, every charity, especially international charities, have, and I've worked a little bit in the charity world, and international charities often have problems, especially ones that are working in countries that have long histories of corruption. Jesse Brown's organization wrote articles not that long ago about controversy, about corruption at a WE charity project in Kenya. And I don't know the details. And
I actually did read that article. And, you know, you can debate the merits of what Canada Land brings to the media world. I think that them providing this information that they've provided as far as, you know, the number of the Trudeaus that have been connected to WE and have been paid, and so on, and Bill Morneau's connection. I think that information is something Canadians deserve to know. I think sometimes their headlines are slightly misleading and lead people to jump to conclusions.
A lot of retractions as well. I mean, they originally published that Morneau was daughter, I think, was, no, there's two daughters,
His two daughters. One spoke for free.
For free. And originally they said that, you know, she spoke for a fee, and then they had to retract that and said, no, she spoke for free. And the other one is actually, once you get beyond sort of the talking points, it's really interesting because she's an adopted girl from, well, not a girl, young woman now, from Uganda, that Morneau adopted this orphan girl in Uganda. And, you know, she now has a job at WE as a student coordinator.
Yeah, and you know,
that's
headlines.
That's a pretty heartwarming story, quite frankly.
Yeah, well, and it's been twisted. And, you know, the thing is that...
It's like, Morneau's got, you know, he's got an interest. He's got contact. Well, it says, Finance Minister Bill Morneau also tied to WE Charity. I just pulled up the Canada Land.
Well, tied to, the thing is that tied to makes it sound like something that it is not. It allows people to draw inferences, which are untrue. Now, Bill Morneau is so wealthy, he does not need to prop up the WE Charity to keep his daughter employed.
Yeah.
Pretty
much. It's they're not going to be having any charity days for him or his children.
No, his daughter working there, she is a Ugandan orphan, and she's working for an organization that helps deal with children who are in her circumstance and similar circumstances in countries around the world. I would think that it is a good thing to have. I mean, she brings to that position a life experience that somebody from here wouldn't have. She helps to inform the organization's efforts in places like Uganda. It is a natural fit. It does not feel like any kind of cronyism. It is somebody who actually is in the right job, you know, in the right place. And again, there's no way that Morneau would be willing to support WE just so they can keep giving his daughter a job when his daughter doesn't need a job. He is exceptionally wealthy. There is no way that a politician and businessman would throw away or would risk their reputation
to be influenced by. I mean, you know, a lot of money is a great way to insulate you from being influenced by mercenary concerns.
Yeah, it's just absurd. And the to get back to the Kenya story, it's really clear when you read the transcript of the phone call between the individual who was involved in trying to bribe Kenyan officials and Craig Kielburger. I think it was Craig. I might have been Mark. I don't know. Kielburger. The gentleman in question is freaking out. He's swearing. He sounds like irate, and he sounds like he's panicking. And all you get on the Kielburger side is, okay, I'm trying to understand how, and it's very clear he's pumping him for information. Yep. If Kielburger was in on this thing, the conversation on his side would be exceptionally different. But I'm reading this, I'm like, how does the guy on the other end not realize he's being pumped for information? You've got to be either out of your mind, not thinking clearly, or some kind of idiot to not realize that you are being, that this is a sting operation. And WE, it's at the bottom of the article, it points out that WE had retained the services of some investigation companies to crack down on the corruption that was occurring in Kenya. And two people were fired from WE for their involvement and then charged with criminal wrongdoing, and contributed or cooperated with the authorities. So there was some corruption there by some people who worked for WE, but the Kielburgers didn't approve of it. Yeah, the Kielburgers didn't approve of it and worked with local authorities to bring it to heel. And also, as you mentioned, this is like what happened in some ways with SNC-Lavalin, in the sense that, yes, they bribed people in foreign countries. In foreign countries where if you want to do business, you have to offer bribes. Kenya is a country that is not unknown to be connected to high-level corruption in its civil service and government. And we're somewhat naive here in the West, thinking that we should only ever deal with countries and governments that are completely above board. Because that would mean that some of our companies don't get to compete. And it would also mean that some of our governments would not get to operate in or charity organizations would not get to operate in these countries where they are in fact needed. So this idea that we have to keep our hands completely clean, it doesn't realistically look at a world where that is more often than not dirty than clean. And the Kielburgers, the attacks that have been going on these people. I mean, I remember a couple of years ago, I interviewed them many years ago when they had just started, when they were kids, when I was working in cable. I interviewed them and at their home. And they're nice enough kids. And then a couple of years ago, Craig Kielberger was part of a series of ads on CTV, and I found him insufferably smug in those ads. But that's neither here nor there to the work that they do. And the work that they do is they are an accredited charity with a very low administration cost. As we discussed last
time. Yeah, we talked about last time. It's like 9%. And the interesting thing about the student program that they were supposed to administer, they said, you know what, our natural overhead is like 9%, which, you know, the government can't do anything for 9%. Yeah. They said, we will administer this $900 million fund for our overhead cost of 2%. I think it was 2.2% is what it was going to be.
And that was going to be split with another agency as well.
Yeah. And like that, you know, that is just unheard of in terms of, you know, whether, you know, a good deal. You know, no one's getting rich on this, but that's another discussion.
Well, the thing is that what this does is offer a snapshot of how to mislead the public based on the general public not being acquainted with the realities of certain aspects of certain businesses. One of them being charity. The other being public speaking. You know, there are some people who think that the idea of paying somebody $250,000 for a number of speeches, I mean, that's an exorbitant sum to them, because to them, working every day, struggling to make a buck, to keep the roof over their head, food on the table, to them, the idea that you could make several thousand dollars for one speech, they'd be glad to speak for a few hundred dollars, never mind a few thousand dollars.
And I'd be glad to.
Yeah, to them it seems exceptionally rich. So there must be some kind of corruption going on, because who would pay somebody that kind of money to hear them speak? But the fact is, public speakers of a certain prominence do command high figures. They command in the thousands, sometimes the tens of thousands, sometimes more than that. And I mean, most U.S. presidents make their money after they're out of office.
Oh yeah. They speak
prime ministers.
Half a million, you know, American prime ministers routinely charge between half a million and a million and change a pop. I know when Obama came to Toronto, he was reportedly paid, you know, close to $1 million for that appearance. I mean, it can be a big business, and if you're a draw, and if you've got a message, and I've seen lots of people have said, well, Margaret Trudeau, you know, what kind of message does she have? What, you know, she doesn't have any experience. She doesn't have, you know, she's a Canadian celebrity, if there is such a thing too, and you know, she has, you know, she's lived through some interesting eras. She has certain insights into mental illness, you know, from which, you know, she's very open about having suffered herself and come through it. And, you know, some people see her as very inspirational. So I'm not, you know, the whole idea behind the corruption is just completely flawed, because, you know, number one, the payoff comes after the contract. It doesn't come before the contract, generally. It certainly doesn't come over a period of, you know, well, Margaret Trudeau was, you know, she was a speaker for 4 and a bit years at WE before any of this happened. You know, there was an article in the Globe and Mail yesterday or today about Natural Resources Minister Seamus O'Regan and Katie Telford. You know, well, they helped raise hundreds of thousands of dollars for WE charity prior to the Liberals forming government. Then you read the Globe and Mail article, it's like, well, yeah, they did that in 2010. So 10 years ago, before they were involved in politics. And, you know, it wasn't even called the WE charity then, it was called Free the Children back in 2010, 2011. And, you know, they were part of another organization called Artbound, which was a volunteer initiative in support of Free the Children, which then became WE. But the headline isn't, you know, 10 years ago, these two people helped raise $400,000 for the WE charity. They're involved. Like, there's another connection here. And it's like, it's a pretty tenuous connection. And to recuse yourself.
Yeah. Well, they're connected to a charity. What seems to keep getting lost here is this was not a money-making scheme. This is a charity, and it is a charity that has been accredited with doing very good works around the world. It's something we as Canadians should be proud of, that it was started here in our country by two kids obviously with parental support and help, but it was the it was Craig Kielburger who was motivated by this as a kid when he heard about how kids were being worked in other countries and basically the childhood slavery that took place there. This is a Canadian success story we should be proud of. Yeah. We shouldn't be tarnishing it. And yes, yeah, so Seamus O'Regan and Katie Telford were connected 10 years ago and helped raise money for a charity, that helps children. Like, yeah. How that somebody could turn this into something nefarious is in itself scandalous, and it lacks any form of ethics. It is they talk about ethics. Turning this into something dirty has been unethical. The way this has been handled is unethical. Who's getting the benefit here? Usually, if there's corruption, somebody is getting a payoff somewhere. Well, Margaret Trudeau was paid to speak not only by we. If she was only paid by we, even though it was, you know, over a course of 4 years, if she was only ever paid by we, maybe you could say that there's something suspicious there. But she wasn't. She is a sought-after public speaker who is represented by a major speaking
agency.
Speaker's Bureau. Yeah. Her son, Alexander, he spoke a few times, and he received on the low end of what people receive per speech. Yeah. In fact, I have received more per speech than Alexander Trudeau received. Not as often as him, but he did not receive a ton of money. Again, it's playing on the people's lack of understanding that what the costs are for people in public speaking. People are well acquainted with what sports stars make for dribbling a ball or yep. swinging a bat.
Or for public appearances. I mean,
yeah. They're well aware of that, and that doesn't really seem to ruffle feathers. What they were not aware of is how much public speakers make. Because unless you've ever been a public speaker or booked a public speaker, you're not aware of what kind of ballpark you're playing in financially. So to a lot of people, this is a bit of a rude awakening, and to them it seems like something must be up, because who the hell would pay somebody that kind of money? It's like, you know, in the U.S. when they found the military was paying like $30,000 for toilet seats. That money is really going somewhere, and it's not for toilet seats. That's suspicious. And so they frame that the same way they frame people getting paid thousands of dollars for speeches. Now, who's making the money here? Is Trudeau making the money himself? No. Is his mother making the money? Well, no, because she already did the speaking before, and you could, you know, if you're suspicious, you could say, well, that was we just trying to soften up the Trudeau government so they could get money.
But they're playing the long game.
Yeah, but the contract that they took for this charity rollout was 7% lower than their basic overhead. So how they're like, I can't wait till we can get a contract from the Trudeaus and undercut ourselves. Like, who even thinks that? It doesn't even make any sense. And the Kielburgers aren't profiting because they're taking only 2%, which is, I mean, you find me a charity out there that operates administration for 2%.
Yeah, well, and as a charity, you know, their numbers are public in terms of what they get paid from the charity. And I read, I was on something, I think it's called Charity Intelligence. There's a website that actually aggregates all of the public filings of all the charities and gives you the most recent financial statements and tells you a little bit about their staffing as well, because they're, you know, they're major corporations. You know, charity is big business, and major corporations want to make sure that their money goes, you know, where it is going to be the most effective. And one of the things that I noticed on it was that the average, and I looked at it yesterday, so I'm pretty sure I've got the number right. The average salary at the WE charity is $27,000. Now, you know, there aren't going to be a lot of people who go much below that. I mean, you've got volunteers, and that's a whole other discussion. But of the salaried people in there, you know, the real overhead, the average salary is $27,000. Now, the Kielburgers obviously make more than that because they're the founders, but I seem to recall their numbers were in there and it was like 100 and change, which, you know, these days for a professional is sort of an entry salary for if you're running any kind of a business at all. Anyway, it's not a lot of money. Now, the thing that a lot of people don't realize, and we talked about this in our last podcast, is there's this mushy confusion about the two entities, the WE charity, which is a CRA registered charity, and it is, you know, it has to be transparent with its filings and its board composition and all that kind of stuff. And then there's also the Me to WE company, which is a for-profit company, which is separate, corporately separate, but obviously there's connections there, because it was basically founded in order to run things to feed money into the Wii charity. And it does. It feeds about $20 million a year into the Wii charity by running seminars and tour groups and travel things, and they got merch. And they do all, you know, they have speakers and all kinds of things. It is, you know, it is a for-profit entity, and it was designed to be one. And it's the me to we, the for-profit, that paid the speakers' fees to the Speakers Bureau, which then paid them to Margaret and to her other son. Except for, you know, what they say, and I think I accept this, because there's really no reason for it to be any other way, that the there's about $60,000 of speakers' fees that were paid by the wrong entity and then reimbursed by Me to We, which was the for-profit one, because they said, you know, that should have come from us, so it came out of the charity by mistake. We're, you know, we're reimbursing the charity, but it all sort of came from that same group of companies. But this idea that the charity is doing all this kind of stuff, most of the stuff is being done by the for-profit private corporation, the Me to We. It's not being done by the We charity itself. And a lot of that just gets lost in the mushy talk about, well, you know, the We, you know, those We people. It's like, no, there's two distinct corporate entities here, one of which can do whatever it likes in a corporate way and did not get the contract, and the other one, which is very accountable and public because it is a registered charity, and that is the one that did get the sole source contract. Now, I think what a lot of this is, a lot of people are still, I mean, if you'd like all of the Canadian conspiracy, you know, all the crazies out there, it wasn't that long ago that everyone was going on and on and on about the Trudeau Foundation and what a scam that was and how Trudeau was making money on it. And, you know, you see sort of the illiterati who have no idea of sort of how all these things work. You know, the Trudeau Foundation is this great big scam that that Justin Trudeau skims off the top of and supports his lifestyle and his friends and all the rest out of, which is, yeah, again, it's a registered charity. Books are really clear. And there's nothing untoward going on with the Trudeau Foundation, but people salivated over the idea that they could grab Trudeau for milking the Trudeau Foundation charity. And this seems to be like a sequel to that, that they really want to be able to pin some sort of charitable wrongdoing on Justin.
Well, I think that the fuss and focus on the Trudeau Foundation is a me too, in a sense, or a wannabe of the focus, the wrongheaded focus on the Clinton Foundation. So
yeah. It's the same part and parcel of that American thing.
It's that same mindset of conservatives who know that if you just start saying that something is amiss at a charity, even though, you know, ironically, it turned out that the Trump Foundation was, in fact, yeah, an illegal operation.
Oh, absolutely.
It broke laws, it enriched itself, and it was forced to close down because it ran afoul of the law so badly. Yeah. Whereas the Clinton Foundation is still seen as an organization which does good around the world,
yeah,
but it doesn't. And so this was just, you know, Canadian conservatives trying to mimic what the Big Brother does in the U.S. Because Canadian conservatives, they just take their cues and their talking points from American conservatives more and more. And so that's what more of that was. And you know, you mentioned this is a sole source contract, and people say, sole source contract wasn't put out to tender. This was a procurement contract. Yep. It's not the kind that is put out to tender. There was nothing, you know, if it was a contract that was supposed to be put out to tender and it wasn't, okay, something to talk about. But it's the kind of contract that isn't put out to tender. It isn't put out to competing bids. It's a procurement contract. And Trudeau had nothing to do with initiating who should be on the list to consider for administering this program. It was Chrystia Freeland and Cabinet Minister Chagger who took the recommendations of civil servants and brought them forward to the cabinet. Now, should Trudeau have recused himself on the vote? Yes, even he.
Yeah,
says
I'm
going to
say yes. Yep. Yeah, and it would have been easy to do. It probably, there's no doubt, it still would have passed through, and he would have been able to say, you know what, I said, here's all the stuff. It's all on the table. I'm not voting on this. I'm not talking about this.
Well, and that's the point I was going to make, is that it wouldn't have changed anything. He wasn't a crucial vote. Neither was Bill Morneau a crucial vote. This was something which came recommended by two cabinet ministers. And it just got what normally happens in cabinet when two cabinet ministers bring forward something and say they agree on it. It got a rubber stamp. It got, okay, you're our colleagues. You're in positions of authority because we respect your opinions. We respect that you have vetted this appropriately. Okay, you say this is the organization that is best able to deliver this. We're going to do that. And, you know, so far nobody has tied Chagger or Freeland to anything to do with we. You know, and then there's those who just say, yeah, but you know what Trudeau said behind the scenes, he told... So much speculation that people have. There's so much suspicion. They assume that they're aware of all the skullduggery that went on behind the scenes. You know, they're forgetting that both Morneau and Trudeau were, and still are, the point people of trying to keep Canadians and Canadian businesses afloat during a pandemic and trying to keep, you know, death rates down and infection rates down. They're involved in some pretty heavy historic tasks. And while I'm sure that they were both supportive of this idea of creating a fund so that kids could, or students could earn some money to pay towards tuition, their minds were very much elsewhere when it came, you know, they can't be micromanaging everything that comes to cabinet. You have to rely on the opinions of your cabinet ministers.
Yeah, and especially, you know, at a time, you know, the whole idea of this program was to roll it out really, really quickly because it's a summer student program. And here we are in the middle of July and the summer is going and you need to be able to deploy and move quickly. So there's not a lot of time for debate. It doesn't mean you do things in a slapdash kind of way, but, you know, time is of the essence in something like this. And if this isn't, everyone talks about, well, this is like the one contract. There's a bunch of different government funds going on right now. This is just one of them. So the Emergency Community Support Fund is like a $350 million fund, and the government gave it to United Way, Centraid Canada, Canada Red Cross, and Community Foundations of Canada to administer. And it's basically, okay, so it's three organizations that together are a patchwork that will cover what they're trying to do. I mean, the whole idea was, you know, to increase volunteer-based home deliveries of groceries, medications, accessing government benefits, training supplies, replacing in-person contact with virtual contact through phone calls. I mean, it's all that kind of COVID-y stuff. And here's a third of $1 billion that's going to three other organizations. But, you know, is anyone complaining about that? I mean, I saw that Jagmeet Singh was saying, you know, instead of giving this to the We charity, we should have given it to UNICEF. Going, UNICEF? UNICEF doesn't operate in Canada. It collects money here and creates awareness for projects in the third world. It doesn't have people on the ground here, except, you know, they don't even use those little cardboard boxes at Halloween anymore to put your nickels in. You know, UNICEF is not in a position to execute on something like that. It just showed an incredible lack of understanding of how the boots on the ground charity organizations work in Canada.
Well, I mean, okay, this was just another opportunity for Jagmeet Singh to prove that he is a moron. he every time he has an opportunity to shine, what shines through is his lack of, if he's an intelligent man, he's done a very, very good job of hiding it with his statements. He makes statements that are absurd, that are not connected to facts, that are not researched. The NDP really deserves a better leader. Ever since Jack Layton passed away, it's been a slide to the bottom as far as leadership there, and their numbers show it. And you know, as Trudeau said, when they wanted to help various food banks, they worked with Food Banks Canada to deliver the program. When they want to help grassroots community organizations, they worked with United Way. You know, here's an inelegant comparison for people. You are able to make a pizza for yourself at home. You can get the makings. You can make the dough. You can get the cheese, grate the cheese. You can put it on. You can cut the toppings. You can put it on. You can put it in the oven. But most people choose to order a pizza by delivery. Or get one that's an oven pizza that's already that's pre-made. Why? Mm-hmm. Because those people have done all that work for you. They are experts in making those pizzas. You can make one yourself, sure, but it's going to take you longer and more work and probably be more expensive than if you went to Pizza Pizza, or you got a pizza from the frozen section of your grocer and heated it up. because those people are, they have put the work in and they know how to make pizza and deliver it to you. And that's the same thing with governments, that they want programs to be done, but there are, to set up a government structure to do so is laborious and time consuming, and it certainly it's not very flexible. So they go to organizations that already have infrastructures in place to deliver the services to Canadians, and that's good because it also helps spread the money around. It helps support various businesses and charitable organizations within Canada by, you know, giving them an administration fee to take care of this program. It's more efficient than trying to set up a government program to do it. You know, there's people who say that there were already student support programs set up in Canada to do this. No, they weren't set up to do this program. They're not nimble enough to move quickly to be able to adapt themselves. And, you know, as it is, you say it's middle of July, even if they were to get this thing back up and running, they'll have 1 month. Students will be able to volunteer for 1 month to receive 1 month's amount of pay. It's not tons to help. It would have been, my feeling is that the way Trudeau really went wrong on this is he should have just kept we withdrew from the whole thing. But I think Trudeau should have just gone, tried to convince him, no, we're going to go forward with this because the shit is going to come no matter what, but the shit will be dispelled, sorry, Mrs. Lawton's, by the fact that good is being done for these students. If parents see that their kids are receiving some money that's helping them with tuition, the stink about the conservatives are trying and their allies are trying to create would become background noise. Instead, because the program didn't go forward and we don't have those parents seeing their children being helped with tuition, the background noise is the foreground noise. And there's nothing to dispel. There's nothing else to look at. There's nowhere to point to it. And you've got these headlines, which are designed simply to create inferences in the mind of people to stir up this idea that there's some kind of scandal here. This is going to go away. It's already not trending on Twitter today. This is going to go away. It's going to be one of those things that conservatives pull out on social media. It'll join. We experienced it differently.
Yes.
The situation between Trudeau years ago and that young woman, which seemed to be just an awkward interchange between people of the opposite sex.
Yeah.
It'll join blackface.
Yeah. The Aga Khan's vacation.
And the Aga Khan's vacation. It will join all of those things. And it'll be just something that people throw up to muddy the waters. But the conservatives are still going to continue to sink because neither of their leading leadership candidates are really catching fire with Canadians. Yeah, and they're not really providing any alternative that Canadians seem to be cottoning to because they're both sticking to the same kind of conservative speak that came out of Andrew Scheer, which the country soundly rejected. And the conservatives saying that they want the police called in. I mean, that's a very clever propaganda tactic.
Yep.
Because all you have to do is say you want the police called in and people get the idea, people who aren't well-informed get the idea that there must have been something criminal
going on here. For that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Not realizing that, no, anybody can say they want the police called in. Anybody can refer something to the ethics commissioner. It does not mean that anything criminal was, but it's, you know, when did you stop beating your wife? It's, you know, one of those kinds of political tactics where all they have to do is introduce the notion that something criminal occurred and people just automatically assume, well, there must have been something that rose to the level of criminality here, when in fact there's absolutely nothing that rises to the level of criminality here.
No, and even the Conflict of Interest Act itself, the ethics commissioner is looking at it, because if someone requests the commissioner to look at something, then the ethics commissioner will look at something, and they, you know, more often than not will file a report that says, now there's nothing to see here. But, you know, the mandate is for them to actually investigate. So you make a big show out of referral to the ethics commissioner and say, oh, this is now in front of the ethics commissioner. And, you know, looking at the Conflict of Interest Act too, there's a couple of people who've talked about it, people who are much smarter than me about these sorts of things. James, I'm going to pronounce his last name wrong, Sprague, who is a constitutional lawyer and I think a former clerk of the House of Commons, you said, you know, it's really, really hard to see, you know, except in a very, very strict technical sense, whether or not there was any breach of the Conflict of Interest Act, because the Conflict of Interest Act says that, a public office holder is in conflict of interest when he or she exercises an official power, duty, or function that provides an opportunity to further his or her private interests. So that would be Justin's private interests, or those of his or her relatives. Now, are you furthering, are you furthering Maggie's interests? I mean, she's already been speaking for them. You know, she's been doing it for 4 years. Are you furthering that? Because it's already happening. You know, this isn't about getting somebody a job in the future or, you know, so there, is there one? And even relatives, the relatives generally don't include mothers or brothers under the Conflict of Interest Act. It's you know, your immediate family, your spouse, your children that are covered by the conflict. You know, and maybe that's an error in the Conflict of Interest Act because people do have their own lives as well. But it's really hard to be able to say that the decision to do a contract with the Wee Charity was trying to make life easier for Margaret. It's like, that's a big stretch. Yeah. I mean, yeah, she was connected before, and like we said earlier, maybe the prudent thing for Justin would have been to recuse himself from the decision and declare his interest. And if someone said, wait a second, your mother, you know, she's a paid speaker there. And he says, yes, she is. She is a very, you know, she's a great speaker, and people love hearing her. And, you know, she doesn't charge nearly enough, but that is clearly not what's behind this this decision.
Well, I just don't see, you know, follow the money. Where's the money going?
In Canada, there's never any money.
Well, no, there isn't. It's,
you know, it's Canada, follow, for God's sake.
Follow the pocket change. But there's just, if you follow the money here, I'm not seeing who's benefiting. People will say, well, the Kielbergers are benefiting. Well, they're not. Their organization, it was not on its last legs. Their organization is doing quite well, and they were willing to undercut themselves to actually wind up taking less than they would for any other type of contract in order to help out the government. They were willing to go from their 9% overhead to 2%, which they were going to divide with another agency. So there's no profit there for them. There's no profit motive there. They were willing to take less. Justin Trudeau, no one's suggesting he was going to wind up with any money. Margaret Trudeau, well, she's already a public speaker. She's already on the public speaking circuit, has been for years, has quite
and not,
a lot.
And not just with the Wee Charity, either. I mean, no, she speaks in other blazes.
Yeah, like I said, if we was the only, were the only people that employed her, it'd be one thing. But they're not. She speaks to numerous groups. She has a tremendous amount to say, not just on having lived through some eras in Canadian history and being front and center, you know, having a front row seat for it, but also she has so much to say about suffering mental health, about being suffering a mental health problem in the public eye. And I mean, she has a tremendous amount they can offer. Maxime Bernier today said, you know, she has nothing to offer other than being the wife of a prime minister, the mother of, but Maxime Bernier is a slimy individual.
Well, if you get your moral compass from Maxime Bernier, you're in trouble.
Yeah, I mean, there's a reason Maxime Bernier didn't achieve very much electoral success with his party. And what he said was, I thought, actually rather foul, dismissing all of her,
her
life experience and her experience as a woman who was in the public eye and ridiculed for having a mental illness.
I mean, it continues to be.
And to pass that over and say that this is just a banana republic. Shut up, Maxime. You know, I just wish, you know, there are things in our political system and there are things with the Liberal government where there are legitimate places to pose questions. There's legitimate places to pose criticisms, but we're not getting that from the opposition. What we're getting are cheap shots from the cheap seats, attempting to just rile their base up and keep their funding coming in from donors. We're not getting, I mean, there's no sense of responsibility. Like, the opposition doesn't exist to be opponents of the government. They are the opposition. They're there to make sure that the policies that go through at least have had a chance to go through a ringer, so to speak, a sober second look. Sometimes get improved, sometimes get voted down. Sometimes the government has to alter something for compromise in a minority situation. That's how government works. But we're not getting that. We're not getting the opposition that we deserve. We're not getting really good salient criticisms of government policy. We're not getting salient questions about government policy. What we're getting is a bunch of innuendo and supposition that is fed by a sycophantic media that is just starving for any red meat.
And anything non-COVID at the moment, yep.
It's this horrible relationship of convenience between a starving media and a failing opposition. And the desperation of the two groups, they've found common cause with each other, and that common cause is taking shots at Trudeau because they know that there's a certain audience that will eat that up.
Yep, absolutely. And it's interesting, when there's a really weak opposition, often the media steps in and becomes the opposition. And, you know, sometimes for better, sometimes for worse. You know, I think, you know, in Ontario, it's for better because the NDP opposition in Ontario is, you know, they're going to put them on a milk cart. Now, you know, you don't hear anything from Horvath or any of her opposition critics. And, you know, the main opposition shining light on the Ford government is the media, but at the same time, and maybe that's just because it's the Toronto media, but at the same time in Ottawa, the conservatives are such terrible, tepid, personal kind of critiques, as opposed to, like you said, anything substantive or anything, you know, thoughtful and considered, that the media has sort of jumped into that role as well. And, you know, they're hungry to sell papers. It's, every newspaper is. And stuff that, you know, you look at the story about Telfer and O'Regan, and you just go like, that should never have been a story in the first place. I mean, you bring that to an editor going like, hey, these guys raised money for them 10 years ago, and they didn't recuse themselves from the cabinet decision. You know, any responsible editor, like, and say like, that's not a story. That might be an interesting point to put in some other story, but it's not a headline story.
In the days when there actually were editors.
There's that too.
Yeah, there's news operations where there either aren't editors or editors are stretched so thin, but also editors are given the order. Anything that will draw eyeballs, you know, it's really sad to see what's become of Canadian news media. They have really become bottom feeders. Not all of them, but too many of them have become bottom feeders. And others, I mean, like Jesse Brown's reporting, I think has been useful as far as information that's brought forward, but the way that it has been presented has been, it seems to be, he's a smart person. It seems to be designed to draw inferences from people who only read headlines, and to lead people to think in a certain direction, as opposed to presenting information and allowing people to connect the dots themselves by reading other information. The headlines are, a couple of the headlines I've found to be very misleading. And I think that they're smart enough over there to know that what they're putting there is selling sizzle when the steak is rather bland. It's just sad because we used to have a good news media in this country, and the proliferation of free information over the internet, I won't call it news, it's information, not all of it is true. It has just reduced our news media to a pale, pale shadow of its former self. The news organizations, they finished cutting to the bone and now they're into the marrow. And so what we have is a news media that is not really informing. It is tantalizing, it is making things salacious, but it is not really helping to contribute to a greater public understanding and discourse about issues that we're facing.
No, and especially, you know, we can talk about the concentration of media as well, but, you know, the Post Media Organization, which just posted another big quarterly loss because they can't make any money at it, but they keep pouring money into it in order to keep the flagships alive. I mean, they're, you know, between the National Post, you know, the smaller papers and the Sun Chain, I mean, they really do speak with a single voice. And, you know, that single voice is not friendly to the Liberals at the best of times. And so they just, you know, it's it's a drum that they beat because partially that's because it's their audience and partially because that's the ideology behind the owners of the news outlets as well. It's you know we can talk about bias in media some other time. Everyone always talks about media having a liberal bias, and I've never seen that. I mean, even the Toronto Star, half the time, you never know if they're going to endorse the NDP or the Liberals when it comes to election time. But the perception is that, you know, you can't get a fair shake of it, but you actually look at the landscape of Canadian media right now, and it is very much an appendage of the right wing. And that right wing is, as you say, petulant, childish, and can't get any traction. You'd keep looking at the poll numbers, and, you know, Trudeau, you know, we'll see how, you know, these are reflected in a week's time when everyone's had a chance to digest this a little bit. But, you know, Trudeau's numbers are infuriatingly high for the Conservatives and the NDP. I mean, the NDP is absolutely nowhere, and, you know, they can't get any attention because they don't have anything to contribute really to this conversation.
They get attention by saying things that are outrageous and absurd and imbecilic. Yeah. And that's not the kind of attention you really want. You're better off being silent. You know, it's that, oh, they better be thought a fool and open your mouth and confirm all suspicions. Mm-hmm. You know, it's better that they stay quiet than they say things that have people look at them and say, well, that was a desperate move and remarkably vapid to bring into this conversation.
And we don't talk about them very much because, you know, they're not tremendously relevant to much of anything, but the Bloc. You know, the Bloc leader was suggesting, well, you know, Trudeau should step down while this investigation is going on. It's like, do you not understand how parliamentary democracy works at all? I mean, if this is, you know, number one, this isn't a big enough deal for anyone to be stepping aside or down. I don't know. I don't remember historically, I'm trying to think if a prime minister has ever stepped down. I don't think in Canada we've ever had one step down.
Step down in disgrace, you mean?
Yeah, step down in disgrace in the middle of a mandate. I mean, even Sir John A. Macdonald during the railroad scandal, you know, he didn't step down. He got beat in the election. Then he came back 4 years later and won. But I don't think anyone, you know, if a cabinet minister stepped down, we've never had a prime minister step aside from that office because that's not the way our system works. And anyway, I don't expect the Bloc necessarily to understand the way the Canadian parliamentary democracy works because they work really hard not to be part of it.
What they do understand is that if they were somehow successful and Chrystia Freeland was the person to lead the Liberals in the next election, they think their fortunes could improve by having the Liberals led by somebody who was not a Francophone.
And again, you know, playing the long game, or, you know, like we said before, I mean, it's really the headline, you know, if you get enough of the dogs barking in the yard, the Bloc comes up and says, well, you know, Trudeau should be stepping down. This is so serious that, you know, people go like, oh, it must be much more serious than I thought it was. I thought it was just a tempest in the teapot, but somebody is calling for him to actually resign over this. And that's the sort of, you know, that's what we're getting from the, like I say, from all the dogs in the yard.
Well, and that's what they are, and they've got fleas. So I hope that we've helped to straighten some thinking out with regard, or at least straighten out some facts and let people do their own thinking about this whole we imbroglio. If people have any questions, they can, as always, they can go to our Facebook page. They can find Stephen on Twitter at Stephen Lautens, StephenLautens. I'm at Stephen with a V, Stephen J. Kersner. Feel free to send us questions or suggestions for topics. And feedback on our programs, but please listen to the program before. Well, I shouldn't have to say that now because this is the end of the show. So they clearly have listened to it before, but I just can't stand when
we rewind it and listen to it again.
Well, we put up the thumbnail for the podcast and people react to the thumbnail, but without having actually listened to the podcast.
Yes, I've had lots of people who read the headline, our headline on the podcast, or the thumbnail picture that you very kindly put together, and they critique, and I say, have you listened to it? Because I actually am arguing what you're arguing in your tweet. So, no, well, I guess I'll have to listen to the podcast then.
That's the cart before the horse, you know. And also, as well, we've been encouraged by the fact that people are starting to feel responsible and take a sense of ownership with the podcast that we do, because we're doing them for you, for us and for you, and because we all enjoy listening to people talking in a language without mysterious jargon that's hard to cut through, pundits who always say the same things over and over. or people who you can predict what they're going to say and going to think. We try to provide a proper dialogue on issues, and it seems people are feeling a sense of ownership and belonging with what we're doing, which is great. So please continue to support us on Patreon. It's a monthly subscription, and it is greatly appreciated. For $1.25 a month, which is $1.25 a week, which is $5 a month, you can help keep us going and keep our equipment operating. We still have equipment that needs to be refurbished and equipment that needs to be purchased. So please help us out with that. It's Patreon, patreon.com, patreon.com/FUNetworkTV. And if you want to give a one-time boost, that is greatly appreciated as well through PayPal, which you direct to our email address, funetworktv@gmail.com. Stephen, yeah, thank you very much.
I want to give a personal shout out to Anne-Marie, who you and I were emailing back and forth earlier this week. Anne-Marie is one of our listeners and a follower of mine on Twitter. And she was having trouble. She was actually having trouble giving the FU Network money. The PayPal wasn't playing well with Patreon or something like that. But she persevered, and I really appreciate that. So Anne-Marie, yes, thank you very much.
Thank you, Anne-Marie. It's greatly appreciated. PayPal, I believe, also does recurring payments. So like subscription type payments. Mm-hmm. So if you don't want to use Patreon and you use PayPal, PayPal can do the subscription type support as well. So thank you, Anne-Marie, for caring so much about the program that you persisted. Most people would turn aside.
Would give up to hell with those guys.
Yeah, I appreciate that. I appreciate that. And we'll hope to continue to give you programming that you feel good supporting. So thank you, Stephen. We'll talk again next week, and hopefully not about this topic.
Well, we'll see how everything evolves.
Yeah, things are constantly evolving.
Maybe we'll have a new topic.
Yeah, let's hope so. Yeah, that's the difficult part of Canadian politics being often bland. All right, Stephen, thank you, and thank you out there for listening. For Stephen Lawtons, I'm Stephen Kersner. This has been Stephen and Stephen on Fun, the FU Network.
This is Fun, the FU Network.